Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Welcome to show number 124. With half of us back at the feature table in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot has still not been hit, $266,000. And we've got a bunch of people sitting in cash games here trying to hit that jackpot or just hit flop a flush and take down a big pot. There's also tournament action going on here and lots more. In the second half of the show today, you'll hear more of our coverage of the 2011 World Series of Poker, including a conversation that Dennis and I recorded last week at the Rio with Matt Affleck, a kid who in the last 3 years has got 19 cashes and nearly $1 million in tournament winnings and two incredible deep runs in the main event, 80th in 2009 and 15th last year, including a heartbreaking hand that he lost to eventual champion Jonathan Duhamel. So Matt Affleck coming up later. Plus, we'll try to squeeze in some other coverage of this year's World Series of Poker, which is now completing its second week. But before we do anything in that vein, let me bring in my partner Dennis Phillips, who is in Las Vegas with some breaking poker news today. Hi, Dennis.
How you doing, Paul?
Good.
Poker world never rests. We're going to be joined here in just a minute by Todd Anderson. And we have some news that was just announced today, some pretty darn good news for poker players, that's for sure. Todd was one of the original founders of the Heartland Poker Tour. He founded this back in 2005. It's now in its seventh season, and it's doing a syndicated TV show in over 100 million U.S. homes each week. And it's now being marketed through Europe, into the Middle East, into the Caribbean. It's going all around the world. Pretty amazing that way. They've had over 80,000 people participate in their tournaments. They're getting close to $30 million in prize money they've handed out. They've staged over 90 events since 2005. Todd Anderson, one of the co-founders of the Heartland Poker Tour, has a huge announcement for us today.
Hi, Dennis.
How you doing, Todd? I didn't say your thunder. I didn't say what the announcement was.
You want me to break it?
I'll let you do it. You can have the honor, sir.
Okay, thanks. Yes, we just announced today, very happily so, that we've been acquired, Heartland Poker Tour has been acquired by Federated Sports and Gaming, the company that's headed up by Jeffrey Pollock and Annie Duke, to name a few, a lot of talented people. Been working on it for quite some time, but we're very pleased with the end result, and we think that we're partnering up with a great organization that has a bright future. So that's kind of the news that went out today.
Pretty amazing. Now then, how closely are you going to be working? Are you going to be sort of sending players, shall we say, upstream to their tournaments that they're going to be having this fall and through the winter?
I think eventually we'll be definitely cooperating in that regard. Initially, you know, this is such a new relationship. We're kind of going to get to know each other a little bit now that we've actually gone ahead and partnered up. In fact, Jeffrey and some of his troops are coming up to Fargo, where we're based, next week, and we're going to sit down and roundtable some of those same questions. But, you know, as you know, the Federated group is actually creating a brand new league, and it's going to be consisting of professional players. And if you don't know anything about Heartland, we kind of cater to the opposite of that. We cater to the more average poker enthusiasts, people that don't necessarily play for a living, but sure have a good time at the game.
Hey, Todd, it's Paul. Congratulations on the deal today. Are you and your partner, Greg Lang, still going to be a part of Heartland Poker Tour? Will you be running that for Federated?
Yeah, nobody wanted to move to Fargo, so they were forced to keep us on. So, no, I'm just kidding. This is our baby. We started this in 2005 and came basically up from nothing and created this brand that's still alive today. And if I wasn't doing this, I don't really know what I'd do. So I'm very happy to be staying on. We both signed employment contracts. We're going to be running Heartland like we always have. We're still going to be in Fargo. We're still going to be traveling the country like crazy people, putting on tournaments from coast to coast. and creating this TV show. Heartland Poker Tour will still be on its regular syndicated lineup. We'll still be putting on events nationwide, and Greg and I will both be very much involved and just kind of looking forward to the new dynamic of, you know, having some really incredible partners. I've known Jeffrey for 5 years. In fact, I can one of my proudest moments was when he said, 5 years ago, he said, "I think you're on to something," when I met with him in Las Vegas. And I hadn't heard a lot of that. I heard a lot of, "You're crazy." I heard a lot of, you know, "What are you thinking?" But I actually had somebody that I really respect say to me, "I think you're on to something. I think you can do something with this brand. I like it." And so he was one of our very first believers and kind of gave me that spiritual inspiration to continue with, which was a very difficult thing at the time. But so yeah, that's where we are today, and we're still going to be here.
So let me just follow up on something that you said and the question that Dennis asked a little while ago, which is, Federated is a league of professional poker players. Heartland is aimed at recreational and amateur poker players and maybe some local grinders who also go out on the tour. What's the vision here of how these two are going to mesh?
That's a great question. In a lot of respects, we're trying to figure that out ourselves. We know that we've got this wide spectrum of poker players, and we know that Federated is going to be creating a very exciting new brand for the professionals. I call it kind of the PGA of poker, and that, I think that's what we've needed for a long time. I mean, the poker industry is a relatively new industry if you look at it from a perspective that in 2003 is when it really started taking off. So we're only like an eight-year-old industry. I think poker needs to have that appeal amongst the pros so they can all play with each other, like Tiger Woods plays with Phil Mickelson. Now we can have Phil Ivey play with Danny Negreanu. They can take each other on and find out who's the best. And it's going to be on television. It's going to be great. Now, who are we? We're kind of a feeder system. We're tapping that inspirational player, that recreational player, that person that maybe wants to aspire to different things. And we're bringing poker to the masses. So in between there, I mean, if you take a look at that wide spectrum, I think we kind of have both ends cornered. So what that means, I think, is just we're able to speak to people over a wide platform. I think we're able to bring, but Jeffrey likes to say that we're poker entertainment, and I think he's absolutely correct. We are poker entertainment. So we're bringing poker to virtually anybody that wants to play. And how that all, you know, materializes, I think is the exciting part. I don't really know how it's all going to materialize, but I'm quite certain we have the ingredients for something pretty interesting.
Well, I like the marriage here, the potential with it. But now, are you going to be hosting more events for the Heartland Poker Tour, bigger events, maybe increase the buy-in level? Or what do you see for the next growth for the Heartland Poker Tour to mesh up with these guys?
Well, first and foremost, we'd like to retain the same markets that we go to. And I think we'd like to build on those markets. So that's our first goal, is let's keep what we have and let's make them bigger, better, more exciting. And then I think with the addition or the marriage between us and Federated, I think you're going to see breaking into some new markets. I'd like to see us go to Southern Oklahoma, for example, Northern California, for example. Just get new events. And Jeffrey and Annie both have some terrific relationships with casinos, people in that industry. And so my first goal is to stay where we're going and get to some new places.
All right, let me ask you, for just selfish reasons, why you haven't come back to Missouri. You had a Heartland Poker Tour event here two or three falls ago. I can't remember if it was in 08 or 09, and you haven't been back since. Was that because of the hassles and restrictions put on by the Missouri Gaming Commission that caused it to be too difficult to put on a massive tournament like yours?
Not at all. We got along great with Missouri Gaming. We had no problems with them whatsoever. Our clientele, first and foremost, has to be casinos because we do not hold gaming licenses. So we are, by our nature, we need to partner with casinos. And in this case, we had a great first event there in St. Louis working with the Ameristar Casino. And then, you know, sometimes things don't always work internally. And as much as we want to be in St. Louis, and believe me, I'd like to hear from anybody that's listening to this show, pick, go to our Facebook page and tell us you want to come. You want us back in St. Louis because we want to go there, and we've been trying for the last 2 years to return to St. Louis. It hasn't happened yet, but there's some definitely some possibilities out there. It just didn't quite work between ourselves and Ameristar, unfortunately, and we're just working to try to find a new venue. That's all.
Switch again back a little bit to what I was saying. The professional league here, the Federated League, is going to have a little bit of a different structure, including a heads-up tournament. I love those heads-up tournaments. Are you going to involve something like that in a lot of your regional ones then, maybe?
I really don't ever see us doing a heads-up tournament. You know, the type of player that we get and the type of venues that we work with, we're oftentimes limited by space and time. I mean, if you think about our players, most of our players they have real jobs, Dennis, like you used to, remember? they come.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, you used to be one of us. Then you got famous. No, these people, they have regular jobs, you know, 9 to 5s, and they can only come for a weekend or maybe a 3-day weekend. So we have to get our field, and sometimes these are, very big fields, like 500-600 players. We have to get them, you know, in the casino and get them at a table and get through this massive field, sometimes using only 15 tables, and get to a conclusion by Sunday night and get it all filmed. So heads up, I think, would be a little challenging. I think we're going to continue to do things the way we've done it. We've had 6 years to tweak our structure and our format and our schedule events, and it seems to be working, you know, really well, and I don't think there are any plans to change the you know, the infrastructure of what we do.
We're talking with Todd Anderson, one of the founders of the Heartland Poker Tour, which announced today it has been acquired by, it's not a merger, right? It's an acquisition. Federated Sports and Gaming has taken you guys over, although you and your partner, Greg Lang, are going to stay on and run that. Am I correct that it's an acquisition?
It has been an acquisition, yes.
Okay, so, you know, we've had both Jeffrey Pollack and Annie Duke on the show talking about this year, and they're going to begin their first events in August at the Palms in Las Vegas. They're doing rake-free events for the pros. There's going to be an overlay involved in them. Annie told us that she's got a TV deal. Is her TV deal your TV deal? And are you going to be doing any rake-free events on Heartland?
No plans to do any rake-free events. I mean, this is a business. We need to run it as such. Our business plan and the way we do business is to travel the country, offer people a great opportunity to win a lot of money and be on TV. And part of that's going to simply require a rake, just like any other tournament. Our TV deals are completely separate. I can't and won't speak to what they have going on. Our network is syndicated. It's on a couple hundred different stations. I just got a new airing schedule. We're going to air 700 times in the next 10 days on TV stations all over the country. So ours will remain intact. We like it the way it is. It reaches a lot of people, and it's very stable.
Well, I was when I was up at the Peppermill in Reno, that was a Heartland Poker Tour, and I've been to other ones too besides one in St. Louis. And you've got them coming up in New York and Oklahoma and Colorado and Florida and Iowa and Michigan. It just goes on and on all around the country. Congratulations. You've done a great job. You've built yourself a very good network of casinos and a very good structure. And now you've merged with another growing company. So congratulations. I think you've done a good job.
Well, thanks, Dennis. Coming from me, that's a big compliment.
Todd, I have one last question before we let you go. In the far-off visions of your mind, now that you've teamed up with Jeffrey and Annie, and in this post-Black Friday environment, do you see HeartlandPokerTour.com as an online poker site, or Federated Heartland Poker Tour, you know, something like that? Are you working towards eventually getting a legal online poker site once Congress gets off its butt and makes the changes?
You know, I haven't even really thought about it. I mean, our business has never revolved around that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're still who we are and where we are. We've never had to count on that kind of business. So, you know, if and when that ever happens, I mean, obviously that would be something we all would like. I mean, it's necessary. I think regulation is absolutely a necessity that will have to take place at some point. If and when that happens, we can certainly talk about it, but right now I'm concentrating on, you know, doing what we do, and which is to just to do events and bring our bring our brand to a lot of people.
Well, like I said, I hope you do get to come back to St. Louis, and we wish you good luck with the new deal with Federated, and we appreciate you coming on and sharing this breaking news with us today.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Todd Anderson. Todd Anderson, one of the founders of the Heartland Poker Tour. He and his partner Greg Lang, now part of the Federated Sports and Gaming Group that is run by Jeffrey Pollack with Annie Duke as the commissioner. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com and via iTunes. As I mentioned, we've got Matt Affleck coming up in just a few minutes. And let me just say, now that Todd's gone, Dennis, you actually are a real fan of what these guys have done, and you were in one of their events at the Peppermill in Reno that we talked about just a couple of weeks ago, right?
I've actually been in several of them. I was also at their main event out at the Red Rock in Las Vegas. It's just so nice because you just meet, like you were saying, the average Joe, the guy that works a 9-to-5 job Monday through Friday, and then he runs to wherever the tournament is to play over the weekend, to play a solid 2 days of poker. You get to meet new friends. It's just they run it in such a friendly atmosphere. You have fun at the tournament. It's kind of nice. Yeah, they've got a good setup.
All right, on to some World Series of Poker news. I came back about a week ago after, frankly, a pretty miserable 9 days, both financially and for other reasons. Dennis has stayed on in Vegas, and have you played any events in the last few? What's your update?
I haven't been. I've been tied up almost the whole time with working and business and everything. I did finally sit down and play a few sit-and-goes yesterday, which was quite profitable, I have to admit.
You like those sit-and-goes, don't you?
I love those sit-and-goes. I absolutely do. You sit down with 9 other people, winner take all, say a 235 buy-in or a 525 buy-in, whatever the level is you feel comfortable playing. But many times you get down to the last two and you just chop it and you move on to another one. But very, very profitable. If you have the patience and can read your opponents quickly, because I'm telling you, it's a fast game. It's a nice game. I love playing those sit-and-goes.
Yep. Well, we get into that a little bit in our interview with Matt Affleck here in just a few minutes, so stand by for that. Most of the events at the WSOP have showed increased attendance. The ones that dropped were the big buy-ins, and this is what we predicted after Black Friday, that the 1Ks and the 1500s would do fine, and this weekend they had 3,000 people in the 1K that started on Sunday and 2,300 in the 1,500 that started Saturday. I like that format, by the way, so if you bust out of the 1,500 on Saturday and you have the bankroll to play the next day, boom, there's a 1K for you. So there's 5,000 people who entered into two tournaments over the weekend. It's the 10K events like the Stud and the Omaha 8 or better that saw their attendance drop, but not by much, just a little bit. And while we're talking about the big 10K events, congratulations to John Juwanda for picking up his 5th bracelet and taking down this weekend the $10,000 buy-in Deuce to 7 draw lowball World Championship. Juwanda now tied with Stu Unger, Barry Johnston, Jesus Ferguson, Ted Forrest, Jeffrey Lissandro, Alan Cunningham, Bones Berland, and Scotty Wynn as the only guys to be up to 5 bracelets. Of course, there are many with more, including Phil Hellmuth, who was Juwanda's heads-up opponent there, and Phil was gunning for his 11th, for his 12th, rather, and came, you know, just one spot away from it. The problem is he ran into John Juwanda, who specializes in this game. But as much crap as we give Hellmuth on this show, Dennis, and we did quite a bit after his heads-up grudge rematch with Johnny Chan, we have to give him some props here, because here's a guy who's really only known for hold'em. And to get to heads-up against John Juwanda in a low-ball championship, you know, I got to tip at least a little bit of my hat to Phil Hellmuth, don't you?
I agree totally, but and granted, all 11 of his bracelets have been in some sort of a no-limit hold'em event. But if I'm not mistaken, this is the 4th or 5th time that he's made it to a final table and gone down to the last 3 and then lost it. So he's been that close to another bracelet time and time and time again. And this field that you had to navigate through was pretty amazing. If you look at that final table, that was amazing in itself. But if you also go, who went out number 10? That was the Fossil Man, Greg Raymer. Who went out 12th? That was Johnny Chan. I mean, this entire tournament was loaded with people that can jingle bracelets.
Yep. If 7 of the last 8 were bracelet owners, that's a pretty good final table. So anyway, congratulations to John Juwanda, who's one of those guys who doesn't get talked about a lot, but now with five bracelets, maybe we'll get a little bit more of the respect that he deserves. And one other quick WSOP note. We talked about Maria Ho, who we had on as our guest on last week's show. She almost won a bracelet in the 5K No Limit. And another woman, Kim Nguyen, almost won the 2500 six-handed limit hold'em event this weekend, but she ended up finishing second to Darren Woods. I think that's the best results we've seen for women this early in the WSOP in quite a while.
It absolutely is, but I'm telling you, it's just a matter of time. This string of WSOP bracelets handed out without a woman being up there on stage is going to end sometime. One of these gals, they're just too talented, and they're starting to play too many of the different events. They're going to win a bracelet. I don't know who's going to break through the fence or whatever, but one of them will be winning it.
Unfortunately, female participation still only at about 5% thus far, but it's good to see some of these really talented women doing this well. And one quick final note for our listeners who are waiting for their money back from Full Tilt, we have no news for you. Because Full Tilt hasn't said a thing. They've been caught up with going back and forth with Phil Ivey and his lawsuit and all that, which we mentioned on last week's show, but there has been no further announcement about when U.S. Full Tilt players can expect to get their money back. Okay, we're going to take a break. Well, I'm going to let Dennis run off to what he's doing there in Vegas. When we come back, you'll hear an interview we recorded last week with Matt Affleck. McMatto Poker will join us when we come back here in a moment. First, a plug for this place that I'm sitting in, which is Harrah's St. Louis, where this weekend there will be four more opportunities for you to qualify for this year's main event. Main event starts on July 7th out at the Rio this weekend, noon and 3 on Saturday and noon and 3 on Sunday. All you got to do is beat your table to make it to the final table of that day. You win that final table, you get an $11,000 package that includes your buy-in to the World Series of Poker main event. Registration is open during the week if you want to ensure yourself of a seat. Don't wait to show up here at 11:55 on Saturday, because these things will sell out, as this is the last opportunity to get in here. Of course, that's not the only tournament poker played here in St. Louis. You can go to harrahs.com/stlpoker and find out the full schedule. And if you're a cash game player, they've got no limit hold'em games and lots of PLO that goes on here four or five nights a week, plus the big 2040 game that's been part of St. Louis poker history for over 15 years that goes all day Wednesday and into the night and all day Friday and into the night and sometimes into Saturday morning as well. For more information, again, harrahs.com/stlpoker, and come play some of the table games and eat in some of the restaurants while you're here as well at Harrah's St. Louis, one of the sponsors of this, the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips, and I'm Paul Harris on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com and via iTunes.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a three-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Welcome back to the Final Table with Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We are at the 2011 World Series of Poker, and joined now by McMatto. Matt Affleck is here, who in the last 3 years has really made a name for himself in the world of poker with 19 or so caches and nearly $1 million in tournament winnings, and best known for his deep, really deep runs in the last 2 years in the World Series of Poker main event. In 2009, he came in 80th. And last year, he came in 15th on a heartbreaking hand where his aces were cracked by Jonathan Duhamel. Now he's back to play a lot of events and try to put some more caches on the board and maybe a bracelet on his wrist as well. Matt, welcome to the Final Table.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I ran into Matt at the Commerce, like 3 months ago. I think it was during the big event out there at the bike. And
the big event.
Yeah. And I said, you know, we'd love to have you on the show. And today's the first day we've actually been able to do that, so I'm really glad we could. You two, Matt and Dennis, have something in common, which is putting together back-to-back incredible runs in the main event. talk a little bit about what it's like to come back this year after doing that. 80th one year, 15th the next year, and then this year, we're not up to the main event yet, but you come back and you walk into the Rio. What's going on inside your head?
It's just kind of, you know, after last year, my goal this year is just play as many events as possible. I really want to win a bracelet, but especially looking at the main event now, it's just like, it can't be possible to go deep a third time. It's kind of like, you know, I'm probably expecting a day one knockout, you know, I'm due for that. But it's like, I had someone yesterday come up to me, he's like, hey, I just bet my friend 10-1 that you get better than 15th place this year. And I'm like, can I put $1,000 on it. It's poker right now. But it's just, in tournament poker, the fields are so huge here. It's all variance. So it's all, I mean, you're always only one coin flip away from putting yourself in the right spot at the right time. So you just got to play a lot of events. And, you know, when you get down to final two tables, you got to win that one key hand. And that basically determines who wins the tournament. So yeah, it's a lot of skill, but there's a lot of luck, too. So, I mean, I don't want to set expectations too high, but obviously I have pretty high goals.
Well, the thing of it is, and people don't realize that, you've got to avoid all those landmines, but you also, you get it in great shape. You're 80-20 favored. That means you lose 20% of the time.
Yeah.
And how many of the times has that happened during the 7 or 8 days of the main event? You've got to avoid those two. Not only do you have to try and get it in good, not only do you have to play very well, not only do you have to be careful and avoid traps and that, you got to also avoid being unlucky.
And the nice thing about the main event is the structure is so deep that is you can avoid those situations more. Like late, this week is all 1,500 tournaments. Like, there's one every day. And you start with 4,500 chips. So basically, my goal in here is I'm gambling to get chips early. You want to, you have to get chips in these thousands and 1,500s early to get ahead of the structure and be able to take advantage of the a lot of weak players that are in the field. The main event, the last 2 years, I've only been all in and called 3 or 4 times. So, and two of them were like I had aces versus ace king where I'm just monstrous favorite. So, I mean, in the main event especially, I'm just playing a really small strategy, not trying to play big pots, not trying to get all in. And the structure really helps out with the two-hour levels. So it's a little less variance in the main event, but these 1,500s and 1Ks, though, you're just getting in with ace-king versus sevens every time.
Yeah.
You just have to get chips in them. So
let's talk a little bit more about the strategy of those, because we have a lot of listeners who come out here, and they're never going to play in the main event unless they win a qualifier. But they might come out here and take $1,000 out of their pocket and play one of the weekend warrior tournaments. And you're talking about how early on you have to get chips. Does that mean that your hand range is wider, or are you sitting back and waiting for things, or are you being more aggressive? Talk about what your mentality is when you sit down in one of those where, again, with a $1,000 buy-in, you're getting $3,000 in chips.
Yeah, and the structure in the 1Ks isn't horrible. Actually, pretty deep, you actually get a little bit of play. It's just early on, they have to knock out the field. So you just can't be scared to get it in with ace-queen, you know, versus sevens in the first level. A lot of these, sometimes the recreational players come in here and they're scared to go out in the first 2 hours. They want to get their money's worth, you know. They want to make day two. But your goal shouldn't be to make day two. You have to get chips to go deep. So, I mean, I told my friend yesterday that it's kind of on the same boat. It's, you know, if the guy flips up pocket threes and you have jack-10 suited, you should probably be calling to get chips. So, And it's not just reckless gambling, but you're trying to, you know, you want to be shoving with fold equity and just trying to get yourself in the 60-40 or 50-50. And you just need to get chips to get ahead of the structure in
so
these three guys.
It sounds like the strategy is a lot more pre-flop than post-flop.
Yeah, I mean, the second level, you're only 60 big blinds deep. And by the third level, it's, what, 50-100 at, and if you sell the starting stack, you have 30 big blinds. So
right. There's
no ante, so you still have a little bit of room, but you know, a lot of the people right now going into day two only have 15 to 20,000. They're going to 500, 1,000 blinds, I believe. So, you know, if you can get, like, I think John Turner has 99,000.
Right.
And I know he's not recklessly gambling, but I think he won a huge flip. He got in 45,000 or something with ace-king versus queens and won it. And he has a huge advantage to go deep now with having a ton of chips going into day two. He can just take advantage of all these 15 to 20 big blind stacks and make them call off for their tournament life.
Exactly, and that's why I said I've said earlier in an interview, if you're looking at it, if 80% of the field minimum is going to be gone on day one, that means, you know, average chip stack, if you start at 3, is going to be 15. You need to go into that hand with day 2 with a minimum of 12, and you're going to have to do something to get there.
Yeah.
Now, you want to go in there with 25 or 30, obviously, and try and get up to that level. But if you sit there and you knit around and you're only playing premium hands and the rest of that, you're in big, big trouble.
the biggest. It wasn't a no limit tournament. Well, it wasn't no limit. I played the no limit deuce the other day. You start with 4,500 chips. It's a $1,500 buy-in. The way they do it there is like the triple chance. So you get 1,500 chips and you have two bullets. One guy at our table folded down his first 1,500 chips down to 300 chips without playing a single hand. Then got it in, lost. Bought in his second bullet, folded it down to 400 chips.
Oh my gosh.
Got it in, lost, and like, he just folded down. Everyone stole his blind every single time. He wasn't playing back at anyone. And
wow.
So it's just you can't play really tight like that, especially in these tournaments with annies and. With the annies and short stack.
Does that
sizes.
Strategy work in any tournament poker, short stack, deep stack, or otherwise, where you could just sit there and do nothing?
Oh.
The main event, when you get a lot deeper, I mean, I kind of, you know, tested out each table first. If the table's going to let me run it over and raise every hand, I was more than happy to do that. If you have some guys that are going to 3-bet you or 4-bet you and not let you do that, I'm fine sitting back. So it all depends on everything in tournament poker is determined by stack sizes. So what your stack size is and what the stack sizes of everyone else around you determines how loose or how tight you have to play. If everyone is with 20 big blinds behind you, you can't be playing as many hands. I mean, 6-7 suited isn't really that great of a hand then.
Mm-hmm.
But in the main event, when there's 30,000 chips and at 50-100 blinds, 6-7 suited is an awesome hand. So,
what do you do when you're playing in any kind of tournament, whether it's deep stack or shallow stack tournament, and you are the sheriff at the table, and a new guy comes in, and he wants to be the sheriff. Do you go head-to-head against that guy, or what's your strategy?
I think that's the biggest leak of a lot of, especially these online guys. They come to the table, and they're supposed to be the most aggressive player because they're this 21-year-old kid, and they get in kind of ego fests with these guys, and they get into these 4-bet, 5-bet wars with them, and you don't need to, and especially in these, $1,500 and $2,500 tournaments where there's 900 people, and I don't mean to be cogging away, there's a lot of soft spots in the tournament, and you can just take advantage of those, and you can probably final table a tournament without going head-to-head with any of these good players. I mean,
he's exactly right. There's so many simple cardinal rules to playing poker. When you sit down at a table and you know two or three people are really solid players there, why do you want to get it in with them? There's no reason to at that time. You've said three or four different very key things, which I love on this interview already. You've talked about in tournament where it's different. Normally in a tournament, you don't want to get it in early with a race because you figure you're a better player than the average player. Why do I want to get it in with ace-queen versus pocket
like
nines?
Versus a WPT structure.
Exactly.
The main event.
Yeah,
so.
A huge, huge difference there. This one where you're starting out with the smaller chip stacks, yeah, you do want to get it in there. You do want to chip it up because if you want to go deep in these tournaments, you've got to have chips at the end of day one. You know, just things you think about. You're making some very, very good statements on this thing.
Yeah.
I like it.
And the point you made about why would you go up against the other guy who's going to be really crazy, there are probably a couple of guys at the table who you will be able to pick on. And again, I'm a cash game player. This is how you play in cash games. If you're playing a nine-handed table and there's two guys who are giving money to the table because they're not that good, and the other guys are pretty good players or at your level or better, why would you play against them when these two guys are there as often as possible?
And the ego thing you're talking about, absolutely excellent that way. I have seen so many times somebody makes a three bet against you and you mid-raise them back because you know this guy's got too big an ego to lay it down. Even if he's on a pure bluff, he doesn't want to look like a fool at the table, so he just throws his chips out there. You know, all sorts of things that way. You can take so much advantage of a guy that has that ego. I love the guy that wants to come in there and be the sheriff of the table.
Yeah.
He tries to play like Tom Durr when his level of play is like, okay, I don't want to insult anybody, but a few levels below that.
Yeah, it's just why do you want to get in with ace-king versus sevens versus the best player at the table when you can just, have ace-queen, have the flop come queen-high, and then the guy just calls three barrels with queen-jack, the weaker player at the table or something. So it's a lot of, there's a lot of different factors in tournaments. That's why I like tournaments sometimes more than cash games, just because there's so many different factors, the stack sizes, and the stacks are always changing. The way you're playing always has to change. Mm-hmm. And I play a lot of live cash games, too, and I love live cash also. But, some of the people are saying tournaments aren't interesting because they're all flips, but I kind of like it how it's always changing. The strategy and stack sizes are always changing. So,
what do you play when you play cash?
I'm in a downswing now, so I moved down a little bit. I'm grinding a lot of 5-10 no limit. I was playing a lot of the 10-and-a-quarter games, which I found out play a lot bigger than the 5-10, more than just, double the stakes. I was doing good in them for a while, but the first few months of the year have been a little rough, so I'm just moving down. So, but a lot of 5-10. I've been playing a lot of PLO. I like the 5-5-10 PLO.
That's so, a great game, isn't it?
Yeah, I want to actually get... I haven't played it yet. The Big O game is supposed to be really good here. That's five-card PL08 for people that don't know.
Right.
And it's
a high-low
game. Really, really, really good game. Yeah. If you know what you're doing at all.
So will you be sitting down with Durr and Andrew Roble and Keto Pham in the really big PLO game here? Which, by the way, for our listeners who didn't hear us talk about this before, it started out as 100, 200, 400 PLO. Then it went to 200, 500, 1,000 PLO. Then one night they were playing 1,000, 2,000. And one night in a six-handed PLO game, they're playing with four blinds, 1,000, 2,000, 4,000, 8,000. Yeah. That's right about your speed, isn't it, Matt?
I said in interviews, even if I had won the main event, I wasn't going to be going to sit in, you know, Ivy's Thunderdome or anything online. I don't like handling those biggest swings, so. But some people love them. One of the guys living in our house, he had a sweat really deep in the PCA. He was already joking around how he's going to create, I don't want to say his name, but he's going to create his name Thunderdome on Full Tilt 501K, and he was ready to take on anyone. So some people like that rush, but just not for me. I don't like the big swings and the big variants. So.
Well, you know, we know a guy from St. Louis who is regularly beating up the 25, 50, 100 PLO game. He's one of the best players in the country at that level. And I asked him, are you going to step up into that bigger game? He said, no, because I can beat this game. Why would I step up and play against those guys with a $250,000 stack in front of me?
Yeah.
It just, you know, the variance of PLO especially.
Yeah, it's huge that way. You've talked about a few things now, which I like. You've talked about the strategy of the poker and how you can, you know, you can't win it the first day, but you can lose it, and some different things. You've talked about how playing whatever the table gives you for being aggressive or not, and you've talked about chip stacks, which I think is vital, and it's something that a lot of players really miss on. You haven't talked about position yet, and how you play in different positions, early, middle, and late, and everything, and how aggressive you can get. Any special strategy on that area?
Depends a lot on my table. If I have, in some of these 1Ks and 1500s, if I have a really soft play table, the hands I'm opening won't change too much from position just because I feel I can play post-flop very well against them. I'll open really wide still in early position. But as the table gets tougher, I tighten up a lot in early position, and I'm not calling raises as much. I'm going to be more aggressive with my, when these good players are opening in middle position, it's going to be hard to flat hands like Jack 9 suited in position profitably versus them, just because in a tournament the stacks are only going to be like 40 to 50 big blinds deep. So you need to be more aggressive or just folding those hands. So just in general, a lot of it depends on the table. The tougher the table, probably the tighter, more straightforward I'm going to play. And the softer table, I'm going to be playing 30, 40% of hands. And I mean, against a lot of these soft tables, I'm trying to create an image that I'm playing every hand, but I'm really not putting in a ton of chips without having it versus them. That's how I got all my chips in the main event last year. I was just min-raising every single hand. I was probably involved in at least 40% of pots. I was 150 big blinds deep the whole time, and then I flop a straight, and they flop top pair, and they just go, they can't fold. They go crazy because I have this absurd image. So that's what I'm trying to create a lot against the weaker tables. So I'm just getting as many pots as I can because these a lot of the players aren't going to fold an overpair when you flop bottom two pair versus them or something. So
that's a good way to describe it, because what you want to do is develop that, quote, absurd image, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I forget what book it is, but it was like the 10 most important things in poker. Number one wasn't even your cards were like number six, and number one was your image at the table. So
I love it. We interviewed Dwight Pilgrim. We were talking about the first time you make a major table, the first time you're on TV, and some people don't want to get caught bluffing with like a 9-3 or something. And he piped up, I want that. I want to get caught with a 9-3 early on so I can show it, so that I can have that table image, because you can exploit that so well afterwards.
I think that was what Lex, was it last year when he, on day one on the feature table, he said, my plan was I was going to bluff every single time until I got caught.
Yep.
And then once I got caught, I was going to kind of tighten up because I had developed the image. And that's kind of what you want to be doing early on when you're playing 300 big blinds deep. You want to be playing the hands that you can crack the big hands. So.
Yep. Right. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips. We're at the 2011 World Series of Poker, talking with Matt Affleck, who had those remarkable deep runs the last couple of years. I know he doesn't think it's remarkable, but the rest of the world thinks it's remarkable.
I haven't won anything yet. So.
When you go back-to-back like that, including ending 15th last year, having his aces cracked by Jonathan Duhamel in a hand.
That was so sick. Honest to God. The only thing I've seen worse was when Kevin Schaffel, on the final table, gets it all in with aces versus kings, and Eric Buckman catches quad kings. But, I mean, that was – and by the way, kudos to you. You handled that with a lot of class. I know when it happened, you had to just be ready to scream and run into water. But you came back in, you calmed down, you conducted yourself like a gentleman, and I was very impressed.
Thank you. Yeah, all my friends at home, so when I play the 5-10 game back in Seattle, if I take like a 2-outer, my friend will toss me a water bottle or something. He's just like... There's a lot of jokes around it, so it's a lot of fun.
Well, you know what? If you do it when the TV cameras aren't on.
Yeah, there you go.
I've always wondered what would have happened if I just, like, flipped the table. Yeah. Like, what would have happened? They didn't know chip counts, nothing.
I don't know. Those tables are wired. That would have been even more impressive. Those tables. You're talking about playing in Seattle and playing in cash games there.
Yes.
I guess part of that is because your online game was taken away. Before everybody else's online game, before Black Friday, you were a victim of living in a state that decided poker was not a good thing, or at least online poker was not a good thing. Last fall, the state of Washington put out the first intrastate ban on online poker. And in the months between then and Black Friday, and even since, have you thought, that's it, I am moving to Canada?
Never that. I just want to... The law was actually in Washington passed like 6 years. I was in high school when the law passed. It was one of those laws that was never enforceable. And the only reason it got passed was they actually challenged the law. And it went to the Supreme Court in Washington State. And they upheld it. And that's when PokerStars and Full Tilt banned all the Washington State players.
Okay.
I'll never move out of the country. I've kind of gotten past the stage of online poker. I kind of felt it just... It's gotten a little boring, just, you know, sitting in your house and playing all the tables. I have a little theory. I don't know if it's correct, but it's like when you're starting to play poker, online poker is the best way to learn, and you get so many hands in. But I feel once you get to a certain level, you're playing so many tables that you're not really improving your game much. And basically the last year, I've almost been playing 100% live poker, and I felt my game has improved so much more just as I'm concentrating on each hand individually. Finding new spots where, you know, you can check raise, bluff on the river, just a bunch of different stuff. And I just find live poker a lot more fun now. A lot of these guys think it's too slow or they just don't like the interaction with the players. But I find it a lot of fun now, and I don't even really miss online poker that much. So It just got to the point where it was, it felt almost like Monopoly money at times, kind of. It was just like, when you won, you don't get any cash right in front of you. Even if I win like $200 in a cash game, at least you get, you know, two crisp $100 bills and you're like, all right, let's go buy a pair of jeans or something with that. So
I love this perspective, don't you?
It is. There is something, a thrill of stacking chips, I'm telling you. It really is, versus a virtual one. Yeah. But
if you win $5,000 pot, it's so much more fun to stack all the $100 black chips versus just
absolutely
seeing your cashier go up $5,000. So
you're right.
But now, maybe I'm wrong, but you basically got your bankroll and everything. You developed that online, and then were able to take that and go to the live.
Yep.
So that gave you a great stepping stone and everything. This is changing poker now without the internet, without the guys being able to sit there when they're in college and play in between classes, when, you know, a thousand different scenarios. What's going to happen the next year, the next 2 years, the next 3 years on poker then? Is it going to see a diminishing popularity? Is this going to influence it at all?
I don't think anyone really knows. Everyone's expecting the numbers to be way down at this World Series. I think almost every single event's been up.
Yeah,
you're right.
Even the deuce to seven triple or single draw was up 10%. Every field's been up. I don't know if the pot limit hold them 10K. That was the first 10K. So
it wasn't, but the PLO 8 or better set a record.
Monstrous, yeah.
Set a record.
I played that one. That event was just
almost
huge. I thought I was going to get like 400 people, and I got almost 1,000.
Right.
So, in the short term, I mean, there's going to be no online poker for probably at least 2 to 3 years in the U.S. I just don't think anyone really knows. No one knows how the WPT 10Ks are going to do. No one knows how these World Series, the 50K is going to do. There's still some money tied up online. So I think it's kind of, in my opinion, a wait and see. The World Series always surprises everyone. I think whenever someone's predicting numbers, you just add 10%, and then you're closer to the actual field size.
Well, you played the high roller down at the PCA, I think, down there. And that was probably your first major buy-in, 25K.
That was my first 25K.
Right.
Now, and did very well.
Yeah. By the way.
That was my one shot I blew this year. I was chip leader with 13 left and got 12.
Oh. But that happens.
Yeah, you know, it happens.
It happens. All right, you've got these major ones coming up. You've got the Federated League, where it's going to be 20K buy-ins for several tournaments. You're going to be high rollers again at the PCA. We've had $100,000. We've had $250,000 one. Harrah's just announced $1 million buy-in for next year. Is this good for poker or not? There's a big argument about whether this is really good for poker or not.
I think it's stupid, but that's my personal opinion.
Why?
I don't know. My opinion, even online, was I tried to stay out of... I call them, you know, there's ego tournaments, like a lot of these, you know, 100 rebuys online that have 80 people and stuff, and they're just the best, you know, 80 online players playing it most of the time. And, like, when I played online, I always played everything when I was playing tournaments. So I'd be playing, you know, a $1,000 tournament and also be playing a $20 rebuy tournament. And I kind of look at that when I'm playing live tournaments as well. I still play, you know, if I'm not playing, I'll play a $500 tournament, I'll play a $300 tournament. And my view is, I think a lot of your profit in the year is coming from these, you know, 10 to 20 to 30K scores that you get in the $500 tournaments or, you know, $1,000 tournaments versus just, you know, waiting to hit that $1 million score. So I think, you know, I played the 125K. I had a very small percentage of myself. I'm not even playing the Federated League. I didn't get in. I'm just shy of the money list. I don't know if I'm going to play it or not if I do get in. I probably will just because they're adding a lot of money to it. But just a lot of these tournaments are egos, and you can't have that high of an ROI in it. The $1 million tournament's actually going to be pretty soft just because a lot of poker pros won't play it, I think.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the players already committed are businessmen.
Well, so, Phil right. Ruffin, the owner of the Treasure Island, who we all saw on High Stakes Poker.
Yep.
I'm in now.
And Guy La Liberté,
yeah.
Whose charity, One Drop, is what's going to actually benefit from that next year, the owner of Cirque du Soleil. He'll be in there, and there'll be a lot of other guys in there. But there will still be some pros, you know.
Yeah.
Sherry's going to be in there, Daniel's going to be in there, some other. Would you play in a seven-figure buy-in event?
Never. if I won the main event, I wouldn't do it. It's just, the swings in that are just so huge. I'd rather play... I enjoy playing the smaller buy-in tournaments, and I think I like to keep my variance as low as possible, I guess so, and just usually have such big swings when you play those tournaments. So
A lot of these things at a circuit event or whatever, you see some of the pros and they're down there playing in the satellites, the satellite in. I think it's a great EV value to do that. And some people say, what are you playing down here? Why not?
Yeah.
Good grief. So
my goal, I'm going to be playing a lot of the 8 p.m. nightly satellites. I haven't played them yet because they've only been getting, you know, 20 to 30 people for the 500s. But, you know, once you get closer to the main event, they have a 1K every night and it gets a ton of people and they're amazing. I almost never try to miss the super satellite day before all like the 10K WPTs or so.
It's good money management. You've got to have your EV on that. If they're paying 20% and you're cashing a third of it or you're winning a third of the time, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, so... And I don't even look at them really as satellites. I just look at it kind of as a $1,000 tournament where it's 10K to X amount of people. So
now that you're a live cash game player, you're still going around and playing tournaments. How much are you touring, and how tough is it to be a touring poker pro for you?
When I first came up to poker, I wanted to be the touring pro. I wanted to go travel in all these places. It's a lot of fun, but it gets tiresome. I mean, I'm not like some of the people. I can't do longer than like 2 to 3 week trips. Normally, this is my longest. I'm out here for the entire time. It's a little different because we rent a house, but I just can't stay in hotels for more than, you know, 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
There's the break after the World Series kind of until the Legends of Poker. But I think I'm going to focus this year a lot on just the WPTs and the World Series circuit events. I think it's really good how they set up the World Series circuit now, with all the 1,500 buy-ins that are getting really big fields. And I'm going to travel. I didn't get to play any of them this year, and I really want to get out there. So I'll be playing almost all the WPTs, World Series Circuit events. And I play some – every year I play like 2 or 3 EPTs. And I'm probably going to play more of the EPTs this year too. So those are the best tournaments in the entire world, the European Poker Tour by far. It's just – you're getting $5,000 Euro, so they're like $7,000 events, and each one's getting 800 to 900 people, and the fields are just—it's kind of like poker was 2 or 3 years ago here, where they're getting the giant fields over there, and the fields are amazing. They're run very well by Poker Stars, and the tournaments are just amazing over there, and they have really good side events too. Like in San Remo, the 2K side event, so it's like $2,500 side event got a ton of people. I don't know the exact number, so I don't want to say, but I know it was over 300, and it's just the fields are huge. So.
Yeah. And there is, for some reason over there in Europe, it's exactly what you said. It's what it was here a few years ago. The fields are so soft. You know when you sit at a table, there's going to be several people who have progressed to basically continuation plays, and that's about the level they're at, nothing yeah. else. So it's sweet.
And you're right about the WSOP circuit events. The one we had in St. Louis in April, we had 875 for the first 340, and close to, what was it, 600?
Almost 700.
700 for the main. So, yeah, big fields yeah. coming there, too. So I guess we'll expect to see you next April in St. Louis.
Yeah, I haven't been to St. Louis. I've heard a lot of good things. I want to go to Busch Stadium. So,
I can arrange that.
You know,
not a problem.
Yeah, you just put away your Mariners gear and start wearing Cardinals gear, and you'll get in every time.
Hey, the Mariners are actually good right now. So,
the Cardinals lost Wainwright for the season. Carpenter is 1-5. Pujols is batting .270. And they lost their closer. Franklin is now delegated nothing. And they're in first place.
Ryan Franklin, we had to deal with him. He sucks. So you'll get used to it.
Guarantee. Right. Head to St. Louis. I'll hook you with Cardinal tickets.
Nice.
All right, before you go, you lost a lot of weight.
I've had more comments about that than poker, I think, lately.
Well, I know this because I saw on your blog, which you called No Days Off, you were actually writing about what you were doing, your workouts, what you were eating, and all that sort of stuff. This has become your kind of life mission for the last 6 or 8 months, hasn't it?
Yeah, I kind of, I'll give credit to my good friend Tony Dunst, the Bond 18, kind of did a No Days Off, and he was trying to get down to, he had kind of different goals than me, but he was doing workouts every day, eating really healthy.
Yeah, because Tony had a fat problem. Right. Come on!
Tony's a gym nut. I've worked out with him, and he's a huge gym nut. I kind of, 6 weeks before the World Series, I kind of started, my goal was to lose, I think it was 15 pounds before the World Series, which isn't really ambitious, but I wanted to make sure I could meet the goal. And basically, I was working out 6 days a week with my trainer at home, and then I was just eating really healthy. It was just like egg whites in the morning, sandwich in the afternoon with like protein bars and snacks, and then chicken and brown rice for dinner. And so, you know, it's pretty easy if you work out every day and eat yeah. healthy. It's not that hard. It's just the committing part which is the hard part. It's not the actual finding the secret formula that's the tough part. I mean, it's been proven what the formulas are. It's just yeah. committed to it, and that's what having a personal trainer helped me with a lot. Was
right.
That helps me commit to it really well.
Right. And you don't have to say it. We play in an environment that leads to eating wrong, sleeping wrong, no exercise. I mean, you've got to be very careful, and a lot of people fall into that. I did. I've lost over 40 pounds just by making a conscious effort of what I eat and doing the exercise and everything like that. If you want to stay sharp at the table, I really think that helps. I do. I think it mentally helps you to be physically fit.
That's why I was a little late coming over here. I'm not allowed to play a poker tournament here without going to the gym first. So I'm trying to go to the gym at least 5 or 6 days a week out here.
Cool.
So
that's good.
I pack like protein bars and shakes in my backpack. I always feel more energized after working out on the table rather than just rolling out of bed at 11:45 and driving to the Rio where you're still half asleep. So.
And by the way, how many events are you playing this summer?
I have 32. On my schedule. It kind of varies, though, based on day twos.
Hopefully you won't be able to play.
No, yes. I've made 2 day twos, which is...
Sweet.
I think almost the same as last year, almost.
Well, this year you want to make day 10.
Yeah, I need
in the main event.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a day 10 this year?
I don't know.
No,
I made day 8. Day 8s are hard to make. I've made one in my life, so...
Yeah, but day 8 is sweet.
There a bracelet bet with some friends involved for you this year? Do you do prop bets?
I don't really do those as much. I mean, obviously my goal is to win a bracelet, and I'd like to have some extra incentive. But, I mean, I just feel like it's when you win the bracelet, you're already winning, you know, out here, like, close to $500,000. And the, you know, extra $5,000 or $10,000 isn't much then when you just win $500,000. But when the other guy wins a bracelet, then it's like,
yeah.
Then the $5,000 or $10,000 hurts a lot. So.
Great.
So I don't like those bets like that when you're already winning money. Then the money you win isn't that significant.
Right.
When it hurts. Cool. It hurts, though, then when the other person wins the bracelet. So.
Well, good luck this summer. I'm really glad you were able to find the time and we could get our schedules to mesh so that all three of us could sit down in the same place at the same time.
Yes.
Hope you have a terrific summer at the series, and we'll look forward to seeing you in person again next April. And, of course, we look forward to seeing you in some TV coverage deep in the main event, both of you, again this year.
Yep. Now, how sick would that be?
Yeah.
If we both could run deep again.
Yeah, three times in a row. Let's do it.
Sweet.
Why not?
Works for me.
Matt,
I, no offense, but I really don't want to play a hand against you till day seven at least. Okay.
You have to turn into the sheriff at the table. He'll already be there, and you come in.
Yeah, right.
And we already know he won't play a hand against you. He just said. Matt Affleck joining us here at the final table with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris. More of our coverage of the 2011 World Series of Poker coming up next week. In fact, Matt mentioned Bond 18, Tony Dunst. We recorded a great interview with him at the Rio, and we'll have that for you on next week's show. Our thanks to our sponsors, Harrah's St. Louis, home of the biggest poker room in town, and also the only casino in town that has turned over a quarter of its gaming space to a smoke-free casino with table games and slot machines for you to come out and play. Also brought to you by Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8. For Todd Anderson and Matt Affleck and Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. We'll see you next Tuesday at 3 here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and anytime via podcasts on iTunes and thechipleader.com.